What if I told you that you were leaving a five-figure sum of money in taxes on the table each year that you might not have to pay? Keep listening as we dive in. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you would learn in medical school. I'm your host, Dr. Jimmy Turner, and here's your co-host, guest host for this episode, whose first job ever at the age of 16 was working as the cow mascot at Chick-fil-A. He's now a CPA. Spencer Carroll. Speaking of first jobs, the show is coming out on July 1st, so do me a solid, check in on your interns if you are a resident fellow academic attending physician who is a little further along in your journey. It's really important, particularly in July, to be checking on our interns, so do that for me. And if you were an intern listening to this, good for you. I love that you're getting started on your financial literacy journey. Please know this, some words of encouragement. You've got this. Keep your head up, shoulders back, and know that you don't have to know all the answers. Just stay humble, ask for help. And most of all, make sure that you take care of yourself, because you can't take the best care of other people if you don't take care of yourself. Super important during intern year, particularly in July, August, September, as you start this journey, to make sure that you're still finding time to enjoy life a little bit, work out a little bit, see your friends, talk to your family, be on the phone, that sort of thing. Highly encourage you to do that. This episode today, got a guest host, Spencer Carroll, who is not coming on, believe it or not, to talk about his work as a mascot at Chick-fil-A. Instead, we're going to be taking a deep dive into tax strategy for physicians. And this is a really important topic for the show, because as many of you, there are opportunities to save on taxes with a high income, but it requires certain things. A lot of you are 1099 docs listening. Maybe you have a side gig of some kind. So you're a W-2 doc with a side gig, or have non-clinical revenue, or maybe you're performing medical malpractice work or chart reviews. Maybe you're a K-1 partner. And it's my experience that many doctors who make 1099 income or who have a side gig don't realize that by having that, you are technically a business owner. And that opens up a ton of tax strategy opportunities, because as we talk about in the show, the tax code benefits people who are married, own real estate, and who own businesses. And the end result of that, if you understand these rules, is a lot more money back in your pocket. I know this personally because our guest today is Spencer Carroll, who is a CPA. He's got a foot in two worlds, public accounting and tech startup sales, as a leading account executive at Gelt, working directly with clients to optimize their taxes. And I ran into Gelt because I personally had some financial needs from a tax strategy standpoint after I paid $180,000 in taxes last year, and realized I probably shouldn't be paying that much because there are tax strategies that I should be employing. And as I transitioned from a W-2 academic job to a 1099 private practice job this year, it became even more important. And I'll be honest, the amount of money that Gelt is saving me personally as a client there is significantly more than what I'm paying them. And because of how much money they save and how cool their process is, it's AI backed and powered. I actually asked Spencer if he'd be willing to come on to Money Meets Medicine to talk about some of that stuff, some of the strategies, some of the ways we should think about saving money with our taxes. And as part of that conversation, Gelt was actually kind enough to partner with Money Meets Medicine to provide a 10% discount for anybody that's listening to the show that wants to work with them in that first year. You get 10% off. So you can snag that by going over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA. When you book a call using that link, you'll get 10% off your first year with Gelt, should you choose to work with them. It's obviously a complimentary call. They get to know you and talk to you and see if it's a good fit. And if it is, you get that 10% discount. If not, no sweat. Outside of Gelt, Spencer has taught accounting as a professor and runs a small business himself. So he's got good owner-operator experience and perspective. And he also hosts a podcast, Tax Talk Unfiltered, and has been quoted by Yahoo Finance, Realtor.com, and Fortune. So great interview, great episode. We cover lots of things. For example, we talk about the worst and best types of ways to make money as a physician. I think it's going to surprise you. I'll let you try to think in your head right now as you listen. W-2, K-1 partner, or 1099? Which one of those is the worst, and which one of those is the best way to make money from a tax strategy standpoint as a physician? If you're not sure, listen. He's got a really interesting take on that. He also has a really interesting perspective on real estate as someone who owns real estate properties. We talk about real estate professional status, or reps, short-term rental loophole, because that gets a ton of airtime in the physician community. And I think his take on that and his perspective is really going to surprise you as someone who actually owns real estate, and whether he thinks it's worth it for busy doctors to engage in that sort of activity, because we get pitched that stuff a lot. So maybe he loves it, maybe he doesn't. You have to wait to hear his take. We also get specific on benefits of owning an S-Corp if you are a 1099, if you are a business owner. And it's super important to really think through that, because that's one of the ways that opens up a ton of doors to save money. I know this from experience at this point after working with Gelt as a client. And we do mention a tool on the show that is client-only specific. That is an AI-powered tool that allows you to figure out what's a reasonable salary for an S-Corp and how do you figure out what that number is in a way that is defensible if you ever got an IRS audit. So they have an AI-powered tool for their clients that helps them figure out what that number is and write basically an audit, a defensible audit structure so that you could easily defend and reply should that happen? And that's one of the biggest questions people have with S-Corps is, what is a reasonable wage? How much can I take as a distribution? We'll talk about the benefits of that on the show, but wanted to mention that tool. It is client only facing. And so should you choose to work with Gelt, moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA, get that 10% discount. You'll get access to that as well. We also talk about some other advanced tax strategies you might not have heard of. So let's get to it. All right, Spencer, welcome to Money Meets Medicine podcast.
Thanks, Jimmy. Happy to be here.
Super excited to have you. This is a topic that we don't get a ton of airtime to. And I'll be honest with you, taxes, I think a lot of people think about taxes as a pretty boring topic. But as I've come to learn more about this and interacted with you and with other people at Gelt and learned even more about taxes than I previously knew, it's actually become like a really interesting topic that I think is fun to talk about, fun to think about. And so I'm excited to dive into this. But before we get started, maybe let's talk about that a little bit, right? So you have an interesting background and now you're working with a company that basically lives at the intersection of AI powered tech and tax strategy. So it seems like there's probably a story there in terms of how you wound up working for Gelt, but let's start there. Tell me a bit about that and about your work at Gelt.
Yeah. First of all, I appreciate your stamp of approval for taxes and the fun that they can add to people's life. We're biased, obviously, but we at Gelt, we love talking about it as well. And it is a game and it's fun to play the game and see how you can maneuver things to save yourself some money. But we understand that most of our clients want us to do most of the work. They don't really want to think about it, which we get. But yes, an interesting story. I'll try to make the long story short, but I am on paper your traditional accountant, although I never really thought that would be me. I decided to study accounting in school because I like entrepreneurship, much like a lot of your listeners. And so I figured knowing accounting, knowing how to do my books, read my financial statements was going to be important as I went into my entrepreneurial journey in life. But as a lot of young 20-year-olds, one step after another kind of led me down the very traditional path. I got my bachelor's in accounting. I went and got my master's in accounting. I ended up passing the CPA exam and starting at Ernst & Young in New York City. And next thing I knew, I was a very traditional accountant working in their audit department, which is great. I still think that's a good career path for people to go down if they so choose. But for me, I knew it wasn't going to be long term. And so I got out of the traditional accounting path and wanted to get into sales, actually, because I felt like sales was about as entrepreneurial of a W-2 job as you can get, because your earning potential is uncapped. And I liked that aspect of it, but I still wanted to be in the accounting world. I spent 5 years learning it, a bunch of student debt, achieving these degrees and the CPA license. So I started in tech startups at another company called pilot.com, and they were also accounting related. And then Gelt reached out to me over LinkedIn, and it sounded like the perfect fit because, as we're going to learn in this podcast, a lot of tax strategy opportunity opens up when you pursue entrepreneurial ventures, when you invest into different things. And so that's something that I'm just naturally interested in. I would research it on my own just for fun. Now I get paid to talk about it with potential clients, learn about their situation and how we can help them save money with tax strategy. So that's how I found my way at Gelt, and it's really been a perfect fit.
I think it's awesome you figured out early on that you were an entrepreneur, because I definitely went through a very traditional career in medicine before I figured that out at the end of my journey. And it is interesting, the skill set that is not only required, but it's pretty fun to learn and pick up through entrepreneurship. So you mentioned knowing the numbers and being able to analyze things and sales, which I'm curious from your experience, when I first started selling things, whether it's online courses or products or services, it just felt super sleazy, right? Because I didn't come from a business background. And I find that a lot of people, when they start a business, don't realize that sales and marketing is going to be such a profound part of that business, because it turns out if people can't find your services or your work or your product, it doesn't really matter. You can have the most amazing thing in the world, but if people can't find it, you're helping no one. And I had this transition a couple years into having a business where the mantra wasn't sales is sleazy, it was sales is service. Mm-hmm. Marketing and sales is what helps people find you. And that's what allows you to help other people. And so ultimately sales is actually serving people because you're helping them find your product. So what was your journey like? Were you always a salesman, or you born to do sales, or is that something that you picked up along the way and maybe had a mindset shift about?
That's a funny question that I have thought about. I am a very analytical person. Naturally, I think that's why I was attracted to accounting, and accounting is a rules-based practice and it is very analytical. But my dad was a salesperson, still is. He hasn't retired yet. And so that's all I know from my parents growing up is sales. And my dad has a great personality and gets along with people very well. And I feel like I've picked up some of those traits, but then also had the type A analytical personality as well. And I think to your point, like a lot of things are sales. Even if you're not an entrepreneur, even working your W-2 job is a little bit of sales. This is a physician podcast. Trying to get your patient to change their behavior, to take their medicine, to see the benefits of a surgical procedure is a little bit of sales, right? A lot of those things people don't want to just naturally do. I don't want to change my behavior. I don't want to take medicine. I don't want to have a surgery. You've got to prove to me that the pros outweigh the cons that I have in my head, and that's sales. And my approach to sales is similar to the revelation that you had, which is I just want to be consultative. I have a knowledge base and a skill set that other people don't have. I understand accounting. I understand taxes. And I want to educate a potential client on the opportunities present in their current situation with their taxes and just present the solution to their problem. And it's not easy because you do get rejected a lot in sales, but my philosophy is I'm just trying to help people. And if my solution helps people the best and we're the right fit for them, amazing. They're going to sign up for Gelt. And I take it very personally. So if somebody signs up for Gelt, I want them to get the service and the outcome that I told them they're going to get. So I do not think of myself as sleazy. I don't want to practice sleazy sales tactics. And I don't think you have to be successful. You just need to share your knowledge and solve a problem for people, much like you're doing with your clients and customers too.
Yeah, I completely agree. And for people listening, if you're trying to hang a shingle and maybe open up your own practice, there's lots of moves to for people considering different forms of primary care, like direct primary care, DPCs. And that transition into entrepreneurship has been interesting to watch because there's been a huge shift into physicians becoming employed. And then as that has created a certain culture in medicine, now we're seeing a certain shift, a certain group of physicians that are saying, hey, I don't really want to operate in this kind of system where I'm a cog in the wheel or a number on the spreadsheet. So I'm going to actually go hang my own shingle. And as soon as they do that, they become a business owner and they have to start learning about marketing and negotiation. And I completely agree, by the way. I don't think people have an appreciation for the fact that pretty much any conversation relationship that you have is a form of negotiation. I'm totally negotiating with my 15-year-old yesterday about how to think before she speaks, right? And you know that she has two ears and one mouth for a reason, right? And so that's me negotiating how to accomplish a certain thing for her. And we certainly know, we talk about on the show all the time, that the way that we consent patients for procedures, the words that come out of your mouth and the way you frame things will absolutely determine whether someone decides to proceed with a procedure or not. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't agree more. Let's talk a little bit more about your kind of business aspect of things, because we do have a variety of listeners on the show, from W-2 employed docs in both academic and private practice settings to private practice partners who get a K-1 and 1099s and locums docs who technically own their business, right? Mm-hmm. But let's start really big picture, because I think this is an interesting conversation in that a lot of doctors are employed. So if you have that person listening to a podcast and hearing about tax strategy, the average W-2 attending reads it, they get excited about it or listens to it, then they realize that none of it applies to them. So let's just start there, maybe as a pure W-2 physician. What can that person actually do to move the needle? And what's just being noise that's being sold to you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is limited. And I do have that experience selling for Gelt, where we will have a high earning W-2 that sees our marketing. And even though our marketing tries to mention business ownership a lot to try to get that across, that you need to be owning a business to get involved in really complex tax strategy. Naturally, people who make a lot of money, they pay a lot in taxes. And even if they're a W-2, they think, oh, I want to go meet with Spencer and see if there's some secret sauce that I'm missing in my tax strategy. And unfortunately, I like to joke with those people that W-2 income is probably the worst way to make money from a creative tax perspective. Doesn't mean it's a bad way to make money. If you can go make a super high W-2, that's awesome. You're just not going to have the levers to pull to reduce your tax bill significantly. There are some, And most of them are very obvious to people already, and high earners are already maxing them out. And so what I'm talking about there are your 401ks, your IRAs, like a backdoor Roth contribution, your HSAs. Those you can still contribute to, and they do reduce your tax bill. But if you're really high earning, you're only going to get $30,000, $40,000 per year put into those accounts. Outside of those levers, you do have to get involved in other activities that require some sort of cash investment, time investment, and risk investment is what I tell people. And so if you're a W-2 looking for an easy button outside of what I've already mentioned, probably just best to max those out, pay the taxes, and try to continue to do well and improve your earning. If you do want to get into other activities, we'd be talking about charitable giving. If you're already charitably inclined, there's ways to maximize the impact of that gift. And so a lot of people don't want to do that for obvious reasons. They're not already charitable. And if you're giving money to charity, that money is gone. You're not going to get that back, but you'll get a tax deduction for it. So people don't always get very excited about that. But if you're already giving to a nonprofit or a church, there's ways to max the benefit there. And then I know we're going to talk about this later in the podcast, so I don't have to get too into the weeds right now, but real estate can be a legitimate strategy that can help W-2 earners. It's just that it takes a lot of work that people don't really realize when they just see a 30-second Instagram reel. But yeah, that's kind of what you're limited to do as a W-2 employee.
Before we get back to it, let's talk taxes. As many of you know, I recently took a 1099 private practice gig as an anesthesiologist after being a W-2 doc for 15 years. And honestly, after combining this with the business income from Money Meets Medicine, the tax piece almost broke me. Should I be an S-Corp? What about QBI deductions or the pass-through entity tax breaks I should be taking advantage of? Nobody really teaches this stuff in residency. You just kind of figure it out after you've already screwed it up. That's why I started working with Gelt for proactive tax planning for my own taxes. Gelt is a modern CPA firm that specializes in helping high-earning physicians. So whether you're a locums doc, a practice owner, a partner getting a K-1, or a W-2 physician with 1099 income on the side, Gelt handles the stuff that actually moves the needle. S-Corp elections, PTET credits, QBI, retirement optimization, really everything in between. The biggest reason I started working with Gelt myself is that unlike most CPA firms, they provide a proactive strategy all year long. Not just an intake form and running the numbers in February or March each year. So if your CPA only reached out in February or March and left you wondering if you paid more on taxes than you should, it doesn't have to be that way. A great CPA is a year-round partner who knows your business and reaches out proactively. And Q2 is the best time to make a switch because Gelt specializes in exactly this kind of transition for those of you who are ready for a better experience. Speaking of which, when new clients get started this quarter, Gelt goes back through your last 3 years of returns and identifies deductions that were missed, and in some cases, able to recover them. This is included as a complimentary service for new clients. So if your tax situation has outgrown TurboTax or your current CPA only calls you in March each year, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA for a free consult with Gelt. And because you're a part of the Money Meets Medicine community, when you use that link, you'll also get a 10% discount off services with Gelt that first year as well. So head on over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA and check out Gelt. Yeah, let's go ahead and knock it out, right? The audience is very familiar with my real estate take. There are reasons why almost never you'll hear a real estate syndication pitch on this podcast or anywhere in my content, despite the fact that I get offered lots of money to provide that sort of ad read. And I don't talk about real estate professional status or the short-term rental loophole or cost segregation analysis. It's not that I don't know what those things are and a little bit about how they work. It's just that for me, I already have a business. And so I didn't really feel like adding a third business. And I think you and I share some similarities. I'm not going to steal your thunder, but my wife is a teacher. And even if she wasn't, she has zero interest in becoming a real estate professional and taking on reps. So I'm curious, though, because the audience already knows my take on a lot of that. As a CPA, as someone with tax experience, and as they're going to find out, as someone who owns real estate property, what are your thoughts on reps, audit risk? Is it worth it? The whole nine yards.
Yeah. The answer to a lot of tax questions is it depends. And in this situation, there is a big it depends. I think that we share a similar viewpoint. I might be a little bit more into the real estate camp just because it's an investment that I have chosen to get into. But I chose to get into real estate investing because I felt like it was a good investment, right? Like I thought that the time that I would have to commit to managing the properties was worth the cash flow and the appreciation that I was hoping to achieve. If there are tax benefits on top of that, that's the cherry on top. That's not the reason I decided to get into it. And I think that is the key that people need to think about, is you don't want the tail to wag the dog. If you are investing in something, real estate, or even, we haven't talked about it much, but alternative investments like oil and gas, land conservation, heavy equipment leasing. If it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. And if you're investing the money just to get the tax benefits, it's usually very susceptible to an IRS audit and them, if you don't do things absolutely perfectly, them charging you back taxes plus penalties and interest. But going back to the real estate, because I know that was the question. Yeah, I'm the perfect example. I have rental properties. My wife was a teacher just like yours, Jimmy. Now she stays home with my daughter and I don't have her try to qualify for reps because it's a lot of work. It's 750 hours plus more time than any other income generating activity for the person. So the fact that my wife stays home would allow her to qualify for that. But she would kill me if I had her track 750 hours worth of time for leaking toilets, locked out, AC doesn't work anymore. She would hate it. And so there's more to life than just saving money on your taxes. If you're going to invest in real estate, it better be a good investment, not just for the tax benefits. And even the short-term rental loophole, that one's easier. And that one is applicable to full-time W-2 employees. But especially for physicians, you guys are crazy busy. And I talk to plenty of physicians who are like, I want to spend my weekends spending time with my wife and kids, going golfing with my buddies. I don't want to be an Airbnb host or a landlord. And it takes a pretty big commitment of your time and money to really qualify for the tax benefits.
Yeah. So what I always tell people is I'm not anti-real estate at all. Like I think real estate's been a huge part of a lot of people's success in finance. And if that's your thing, I think that's wonderful. What I am all about, though, is just giving a fair shake at what a situation actually is, not just talking about the benefits, but also the drawbacks, because it does get pitched as this panacea for taxes and how you can write off all your W-2 income if you're a W-2 physician, if your partner is someone that wants to do real estate professional status and all that stuff, without talking about the 15 to 20 hours a week that it has to go into 750 divided by 52, whatever the number ends up being, right? It's a significant amount of work. Or the cost segregation analysis and just really advancing all the tax benefits when you look at depreciation, forced depreciation. But no one really talks about the fact that unless you want a 1031 exchange for the rest of your life, like you will eventually owe taxes on that. That side of things is often left out too. Oh, what happens at the end if you change your mind?
And just to go one step further, it's also a one-hit wonder. Once you've done cost segregation and bonus depreciation on that property, it's not like you can do it again the next year. You have to go buy a brand new property and repeat the process. So I see it on the internet all the time too. If you make $250,000 plus and you're paying taxes, you're a sucker, and instead you could pay $0 in taxes. And what they're pitching most likely is a depreciation real estate strategy. But the thing is, it's a hamster wheel. You have to constantly be buying new properties to do this. Otherwise, you're just going to have to pay the max tax the next year if you don't do it again. And to your point, Uncle Sam gets their money eventually, unless you die. And most of the clients I talk to don't get too excited about the passing away tax strategy. They want the money now. And you do have depreciation recapture. The one caveat I will share is, at least for right now, with the current tax law, depreciation recapture maxes out at 25%. If you are a super high earner, then you might be paying 37% federally. So you do get that 12% margin arbitrage play there. But again, 12% is usually not something that is exciting enough for you to introduce all this work into your life.
Yeah. Ultimately, if you want advanced tax strategy, it requires having some complexity. And the way that I read the tax code is it sure seems like it's made for people that are married and that own businesses. And so that's where you're going to get a lot of the benefit, whether that's in real estate or something else we need to talk about, which is the doc that is making 1099 money, or maybe they're a K-1 partner. Yep. You said W-2 is the worst way to make money from a tax strategy standpoint. Why is being a private practice partner, maybe getting a K-1 or a 1099 in particular, why are those more beneficial from a tax standpoint? What opportunities does that open up for somebody now that they have a little more complexity? Because yes, you're a business owner, you got to run your books and do a few other things, but with that complexity comes some benefits.
Yep, exactly. So you're introducing complexity and you're becoming a business owner. And going back to us being tax nerds here at Gelt and me myself, I view the tax code as a beautifully, cleverly designed work of art. And if you really understand it, the government is incentivizing people to do things that are good for the country, good for the economy, good for individuals. And yes, they want businesses that hire and employ people, and that's great. You're going to be a W-2. But they really want people to create new opportunity. And that's what business owners do, is you're creating all this brand new economic stimulus, and they're going to incentivize you and reward you for that. And so when you become a business owner, all of a sudden the tax code opens and you get to play with a bunch of different creative strategies, like how your business is structured, how you pay yourself. Maybe you could pay family members. How do you save for retirement? What can you write off against your gross revenue as a business owner? So that's the difference between being a W-2 and a business owner, is now all of a sudden you can move your money around, make different decisions that are going to actually reduce your tax bill, which is what people are going to get excited about. Probably one of the bigger tax teases out there, unfortunately, is the K-1 partner. Not all the time. If you're part of a smaller partnership, maybe it's you and a couple other docs, you typically have the flexibility to work with a strategic CPA and do things that benefits all of you as owners of the business. If you're a K-1 partner at a huge conglomerate medical practice, like I've talked to a few who are partners at Kaiser Permanente, that is such a big organization that once you reach partner and you start getting some or all of your income as a K-1, it's really effectively treated like a W-2, except you also get the bummer of excess self-employment tax. So that is one that is a tease where people think, oh, I'm a business owner now, this is going to help me on my taxes. And unfortunately, there's not much we can do.
So honestly, it sounds like maybe being a W-2 isn't the worst situation. It's actually being a K-1 at a large conglomerate, because you don't get any of the tax benefits of owning your own business, and you have self-employment taxes added on top of that.
Yes, for sure. Which we all pay self-employment tax. That's Social Security and Medicare. But when you're a W-2, you just pay the employee half and then your employer pays their half. But when you're self-employed, including your K-1 income, you pay both halves of that equation. So that's 15.3% of your income until you reach the Social Security wage limit. So yeah, that was a long way of answering your question. Probably the best opportunity is being locums, 1099, or starting your own private practice, or getting some partners, but keeping it small where you can still have the flexibility to play around with your entity structure, how you're owning your partnership share.
Yeah, and as listeners know, I just transitioned from a W-2 job to a 1099 now, and I was actually going to take a W-2 because it offered group disability insurance, and as all the listeners know, I can't get disability insurance individually because I'm uninsurable after being talked into the wrong kind of thing by an insurance agent when I was in training. So for me, I thought about taking the W-2 specifically for that benefit, and then I read the group policy and realized that because I make money outside of that clinical job, I wasn't going to get paid anything. And so I was basically taking a W-2 and missing out on all the tax strategies and tax benefits that might come along with that for something I never would have ended up using. But one of the things I share during the intro, I decided to become a client at Gelt myself. And so really can't provide a higher recommendation than that. I'm paying you guys to help me because I think that what you do is actually extremely helpful. And one of the conversations that we've been having is about setting up S-corps. And I find that to be an interesting topic because that's a little bit like rep status, to be honest with you. It gets a lot of airtime. People talk all about it, but then they don't really get into the nitty gritty and like when it makes sense and when it doesn't. And so for our listeners, maybe let's start with the benefits of having an S corp, some of the opportunities that opens up, and at what income does it start to make sense? So if someone's even a W-2 listener that has a side gig, they're doing medical malpractice work or chart reviews or working for someone else, or they've got an online business like me, at what income does an S corp really start to be something that, yeah, I should start considering this because that makes sense?
Yeah, it's a great question. You're right. S corp gets a lot of hype these days. Some of it is very warranted, some of it not so much. And again, it's because the answer is it depends. I'll start with the benefits. So there's two main benefits that you should keep in mind when you're thinking about structuring your business as an S-Corp. And one, that's the self-employment tax. So we've talked about that. That's Social Security and Medicare. When you're a business owner, you pay both halves. So it's 15.3% until you hit the Social Security wage limit. In 2026, that's $186,000. And I think some change, but somewhere around there. What happens with an S-Corp is it is a requirement that you have to pay yourself as the owner of the S-Corp a reasonable W-2 salary. There's no black and white definition as to what reasonable means, but it needs to be reasonable because if the IRS ever comes knocking, they're going to say that you need to reallocate some of your profit distribution as salary and repay those self-employment payroll taxes, penalties, interest. So you don't want that. So that's benefit number one is on the profit above and beyond your W-2, you don't pay the excess Social Security and Medicare. The second pro of an S-Corp is PTE or PTET, pass-through entity tax credits. That is only eligible for S-Corps and partnerships. Most states offer this. Some states do not. So you also need to consider whether your state even allows PTE payments. But basically, to translate that into layman terms, it pretty much means that your entity can pay the state income taxes for you, and you get full credit on your federal tax return, which means that you get to get around that SALT cap. So the SALT cap is an itemized bucket. It used to be $10,000, now it's $40,000, depending on how much you make. If you make too much, it'll drop back down to $10,000. But the S-Corp unlocks that for you. Now, when does it make sense to consider the S-Corp? Again, it depends, but to give an answer, we would probably start crunching the numbers around 100 to 120 of net profit. So that means after you've written off all of your expenses, any pre-tax retirement contributions that you're making, that's when we'd start thinking about it. It may still not make sense at that number because again, part of that 100 to 120 needs to go to your salary and the salary piece provides zero benefit for you. And as a physician, if you're going to pay yourself a reasonable salary, it probably needs to be decently high, right? You can't pay yourself $35,000 as a doctor. When it really starts to make sense is probably in the 150 to 200K range, especially for a physician, because then we can fit a salary into that and then still have enough profit left over to save you money on the self-employment tax. So that's probably what we would consider. But another thing to think about that you mentioned, Jimmy, is if somebody is just doing something on the side, like malpractice work, but you still have a W-2, your Social Security wage limit considers all of your earnings, so including that W-2 job. And so I talk to a lot of physicians that are very high earning W-2s, let's say 300, 400,000 range, and then they make another 100, 150 moonlighting, doing locums work, something like that. For them, the S-Corp doesn't become reasonable until even further down the road, because if you're hitting the Social Security wage cap with your W-2, then you're only avoiding Medicare on your S-Corp, and Medicare is the smaller portion of the two. It's really anywhere from 3 to 4%. So that's the only savings you're going to achieve on the net profit above and beyond the W-2, and you need to consider then an S-Corp is more complex, which means that you're going to increase the costs of running your business. Your CPA is going to charge you more to file an S-Corp. You're going to have to bring on a payroll company to run payroll for you. So the juice has to be worth the squeeze after considering the costs.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And it's an interesting thing to think through because it does open up some opportunities that you wouldn't have if you decided to just get paid as a sole proprietor and get hit with all of those taxes from both the employer and the employee side. It does matter if you have W-2 income somewhere else. And if this is just additional self-employed income that you have from medical malpractice work and you make $100,000 there, but you make $400,000 from a W-2, well, it kind of changes the way that the math works. And so what I'm getting at here and what I was kind of hoping to show, and this, I think the listeners are going to be picking up on this, is that there's a lot of complexity. There's a lot of if this, then that. There's a lot of thinking through in this particular situation, what is the best thing to do? And so I do want to ask a question about GELT, because this is one of the things that made me love the idea of what GELT does, is that GELT isn't just a CPA firm. that provides tax strategy. They're also technologically enhanced, AI-backed. And so explain to me all those complexities that you just explained, which I can tell you right now, some of our listeners did not understand a lot of the words that just came out of your mouth. So, but it's just complex, right? You have to really kind of know this stuff and learn about it and want to. How does an AI-empowered solution in the CPA or tax strategy space help make sense, provide better service than a CPA that's just pushing a pencil and running numbers on a calculator?
Yep. I'll start with the service level, and then I'll dive a little bit deeper into a cool tool that Gelt has developed internally with our tech team, because we are a tech startup. So we have CPAs like myself, and that's actually the majority of the company, as you can imagine. But at the same time, we do have a team of engineers and product people that are building our tax platform and providing tools to our internal team, but also to our clients. And so starting with the service level, the tools that our tech team are building and providing for our CPAs here in-house at Gelt means that we're spending less time with the manual grunt data entry work of tax prep, which just inevitably frees up the CPA's time, which means that we can spend time live on calls with our clients. So I'm sure plenty of your listeners have a CPA relationship where it takes weeks to even get a response via email, let alone try to lock down 30 minutes to an hour of their CPA's actual free time to talk about their tax planning and strategy. Look, unfortunately, the CPA landscape it's aging. I talk to a lot of people. The reason they're exploring Gelt is because their CPA is retiring. Or even worse, I've had plenty of people say that their CPA has passed away in the last year, and that's why they're looking. Yeah, no, scary.
Yikes.
And so it's an aging industry with not a lot of young CPAs filling in that role. And so CPAs are incredibly busy. And if they're not using technology to increase their efficiency, they're just going to get so bogged down, they're not going to be able to serve you very well. So that's number one. We're using AI and technology to do the repeatable automated stuff so that our CPAs have more time with you. But then beyond that, we do want to create even unique tools to Gelt that are going to provide options to our clients. And one that we just released this quarter is we now have an AI tool that provides an audit defensible, reasonable salary study for our S-Corp owners. So if a physician signs up and they're at 1099 and we're thinking about making them an LLC, taxes, and S-Corp, we've got to determine what their reasonable salary should be. Usually people want to push that as low as possible so that more profit is shielded from the self-employment tax. And in an instant, we can create an audit defensible study that gives you a minimum reasonable salary, which our clients love. And it protects you if the IRS, which it's rare, but if the IRS ever did come knocking, we can provide the documentation that says, look, this is audit proof in a sense. So we have that, and then we're working on it. We haven't released it yet, but your ChatGPTs, your Claudes of the world, we're working on a tool that we're going to call Allison. I don't know who came up with that, but I kind of like it. And that's going to be our internal Gelt platform LLM that's going to know our clients. You can ask the LLM questions and it's going to give you AI responses just like you could ask ChatGPT or Claude, except it knows you personally because it has all your tax data housed within Gelt.
I love it. And I'll make sure to get that link from you for the S-Corp reasonable salary calculator for those that want to check that out. And I'll put it in the show notes so that people can click the link and head over to Gelt and see that calculator, because I actually haven't seen that one yet. So I'm excited to check that out for myself. So cool. It's more for just selfish reasons that I'm asking for this. I'm just kidding. I'll share it with everybody. But so as people are listening to this, and we've talked about maybe the worst tax situation being a K-1 partner at a very large conglomerate corporate entity that doesn't really benefit from self-employment tax strategies, to the W-2. And then we've talked about 1099s and business owners and the levers that opens up. So if someone's listening to this and they're wondering, hey, I talked to my CPA in February or March, they asked for my documents, I send them in, and then they just send me my tax liability back and I write a check for whatever, and hopefully I'm in the safe harbor so I don't get hit with penalties and fees. That person that's having that kind of experience compared to true tax strategy where we're looking at individual solutions for your individual situation that open up doors to save a lot of money from a tax standpoint, where do you think on the spectrum it makes the most sense for a physician listening to this podcast right now to say, you know what? I think I need more than just compliance and just filing my taxes and getting that tax liability statement from my CPA. And I need more tax strategy. Does it make sense for a doctor to start looking into that?
Yep. So I know we've been nailing the W-2s on this podcast, but I will say, even if you are a W-2 or mostly W-2, if you're the type of person that really nerds out on personal finance and investing, and you see yourself wanting to get involved in short-term rentals, all that good stuff, still come around, that's an opportunity. We can help you achieve that strategy and save some money. And then the obvious would be those that are business owners. And yes, probably the number one red flag that would tell me that you need to at least have a conversation with somebody else is if you don't talk to your CPA pretty much at all during the year, if you're making six figures and you're not an S corp, nobody's talked to you about it. Nobody's talked to you about the difference between a SEP IRA, a solo 401k, cash balance plan. You're very likely leaving money on the table. So it's worth a conversation, because it could be. We've seen it plenty of times at Gelt. Tens of thousands of dollars. It's not always that. Sometimes we save a client $8,000, $15,000, which is still great. And clients love that. And I could find a lot of uses for an extra $12,000 in my year budget. But we have some clients where it's $30,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year if you're not strategizing with your taxes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I literally have one of my tax strategy meetings later this afternoon about my own personal situation. And I'm absolutely going to end up being one of those people that's saving a larger five-figure sum of money because of the tax strategies that we're putting in place. And it does give me a little bit of regret about prior years and maybe some opportunities that I left on the table there. But I'm super excited to dive into that in my own personal world. Obviously, if people want to go check out Gelt and actually get a 10% discount that we've partnered with all of you at Gelt to provide to the Money Meets Medicine community, they can go to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA, and that will send you directly to Gelt. Get a 10% discount working first year with Spencer and his friends. So that's a great opportunity for the audience, and we appreciate the partnership there. But Spencer, it has been a real pleasure having you on the show, and I really appreciate you sharing all your knowledge and experience with the Money Meets Medicine community.
Yeah, it's been great, Jimmy. Thank you for having me on. And if you want me on in the future, just let me know. Always fun chatting it up with you. So thank you.
We'll do it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer.